I'm reading from the New American Standard Version, Luke 14, verses 1 to 14. The first heading is Jesus Heals on the Sabbath. It happened that when he went into the house of one of the leaders of the Pharisees on the Sabbath to eat bread, they were watching him closely. And there in front of him was a man suffering from dropsy. And Jesus answered and spoke to the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they kept silent. And he took hold of him and healed him and sent him away. And he said to them, "Which one of you will have a son or an ox fall into a well and will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day?" And they could make no reply to him. This is the parable of the guests. And he began speaking a parable to the invited guests when he noticed how they'd been picking out the places of honor at the table, saying to them, "When you're invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for someone more distinguished than you may have been invited by him, and he who invited you both will come and say to you, 'Give your place to this man,' and then in disgrace you proceed to occupy the last place. But when you are invited, go and recline at the last place, so that when the one who has invited you comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, move up higher.' Then you will have honor in the sight of all who are at the table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." And he also went on to say to the one who had invited him, "When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors. Otherwise, they may also invite you in return, and that will be your repayment. But when you give a reception, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, since they do not have the means to repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." Word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. It's good to be back here with you again, so thank you for the invitation. I am not going to ask you to sing a song today. But I do want to start off with a story. As you know, Canada's response to the Syrian refugee crisis has been quite paramount, and this conversation has opened up about how, as a country, we can be open and welcoming these refugees. And for me, it reminds us of a very central biblical practice, Christian practice of hospitality, and so I want to talk about that today. I spent my university in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and went all the way to the other side of the country to do my undergrad. And one Thanksgiving weekend, I decided to go on a little road trip. Hopped into my little Toyota Corolla, started driving around the countryside, beautiful countryside, and ended up in this small town called Wolfville. It was late at night. I'm a student. I don't have a whole lot of money, so I pull over the side of the road because I can't afford a bread and breakfast or anything else. So I pull over to the side of the road recline the chair and fall asleep. When I wake up in the morning, I wake up to this man standing in the distance, and he's walking towards me, an older man with a cane. And I look around where I'm parked, and it looked like, oh my goodness, I think I'm parked on his property. So I'm anticipating the response, and he's coming towards my car, and he knocks on my window, and I roll it down, very apologetic. "Oh, I'm so sorry, you know, it was late at night, and I didn't want to drive while I was tired, so I pulled over the side of the road and just slept." And so, and he goes, looks at me, and he goes, "Well, in that case, do you want to come in for a coffee?" I said, "Okay." Wow, I look kind of surprised. So I enter, he takes me into his house, and we go in, and he leads me through his house, and his wife is looks at this tall Asian guy walking through the house, and she says, what's going on? And he invited me. and so we end up in the kitchen. He's got this coffee brewing, and he says to me, "Hey, do you want some eggs? And I said, sure, yeah, I'd like some eggs. He says, okay, well, there's some eggs there, and there's a frying pan, and why don't you help yourself to making some eggs? And while you're at it, make me one, too. I like it over easy. So here I am drinking coffee and making eggs on his stove, and we had this breakfast, and that wasn't, and if that was not enough, he says, what are you doing? You know, I said, well, no, I've, you know, nothing much. And he goes, hey, you want to come to church with me? I said, oh, okay, sure. And so he took me to church, and then after we had this lovely Thanksgiving service, he says, I want to show you my town. And we drove around all over his small little town, Wolfville, very quaint, very beautiful. We visited Acadia University, and then he took me to this old country church with English style box pews and a lofted gallery and a wood burning stoves, and it was just this really like built in like the, you know, 1700s or something. He showed me it and he said, oh, hey, why don't you climb up on the pulpit there? I said, no, that's fine. But after this tour of his town, he said, why don't you come over for lunch? I have my son and his family, they're coming over from Halifax and we're going to have a barbecue, and why don't you stay? And I said, okay, sure, I could do that. We're going to have a barbecue, we're going to have some hot dogs, hamburgers. Oh, and can you grill? And I said, okay, I could grill. All right, so I'm here I am in lunchtime. I'm grilling hot dogs and flipping burgers, talking with his son, and he works for the CBC, and just had this lovely afternoon time with his family, and just a wonderful experience of hospitality, and it was a wonderful gift, and something I'll always continually remember about the generosity of this elderly man opening the doors for this stranger. Throughout the course of his life, Jesus sat at many tables. And in the first century, it wasn't uncommon for a traveling prophet or evangelist to rely on the hospitality of local villagers and townspeople for food and lodging. And so it's no surprise that we encounter Jesus in the homes of so many people during his life and ministry. In fact, when you read through the Gospels, it's amazing to see how much Jesus' ministry happens in the house and around a table. It was Peter's mother-in-law who was at home suffering from a high fever when Jesus visited her home and healed her. It was at the home of the synagogue leader Jairus who, when Jesus came and raised his little girl back to life. And it was while Jesus was teaching and preaching in the home where we saw four friends opening the roof and lowering their paralytic friend and asking Jesus to heal this man. And of course, the most famous story of all, it was in the home of the most despised tax collector, Zacchaeus, that Jesus enters into his home, shares this meal, and changes his life. Much of Jesus' ministry happened in the home and around the table. And in fact, his very first miracle was at a banqueting table when he saves the bridegroom from public shame by turning water into wine. And it was while Jesus was reclining at the table that he gets up, puts a robe around his waist, and washes his disciples' feet. What Jesus says and does at the table is a reflection of what life in the kingdom of God is all about. And so we find Jesus in the home of a very prominent Pharisee one Sabbath day. And after the Shabbat service was finished, this influential leader opens his house, extends an invitation to his community, and hosts probably a most lavish luncheon. Most likely gathered around his table were key members of the community, distinguished scholars, shrewd lawyers, savvy business people, gathered around probably some professionals and stakeholders. This was a power luncheon with movers and shakers and power brokers, the upwardly mobile. And just in case the optics might suggest that this was some sort of RSVP-type event, The guest included a man who was suffering from abnormal swelling of his body. Now, we don't know much about this man. Maybe he was a close friend of the host and he came along because he heard that Jesus was a healer and maybe wanted to have healing for his edema. Or maybe he was this random person who was co-opted by the host to see what Jesus would do, kind of a pawn in this legalistic game of chess. But regardless of how he got there, it's clear that Jesus is sitting at a table not of hospitality, but of hostility. Jesus was being carefully watched, Luke tells us. And the Greek word here literally means inspected alongside and to do so insidiously, looking for some error or some moral failure. Jesus was under the microscope, every word, every move scrutinized, every word being parsed. Will he break the Sabbath laws and heal the man or remain silent and keep the status quo? This table that Jesus was sitting at was a table of hostility, not hospitality. And we see this in the way that the guests were sizing Jesus up, but we also see this in the way that the guests were sizing one another up. Luke says that Jesus noticed how guests picked the places of honor at the table. The scene Luke describes here is basically the guests were actively sizing their competition, determining the pecking order, and jockeying for the best seat in the house, the one closest to the host. Picking the places of honor is Luke's way of saying that both the guests and the host valued this culture of self-promotion, and they enjoyed the power and status that their table politics created for themselves. This was not a table full of companions, but of competitors. But this kind of table politics happens all the time because where you sit matters. Where you sit around the table matters. It matters to my kids when we go to the restaurant and they argue where they want to sit next to which parent. It happens at a very young age. Walk into any high school cafeteria and where you sit matters. I work at Burnaby Youth Custody Services, and one of the things I really notice when I walk onto the units during mealtime, the kids that are gathered, they are seated in their pecking order, who's the highest and who's the lowest in that particular unit. And you can actually feel the tension when a new kid comes onto the unit and is wondering where to sit and how all of them are jockeying for and ensuring and making sure that, okay, no, you're not taking my seat. This is where the heavies sit. You can sit there. And so you can feel the amount of stress that kids are experiencing when you have to jockey and find a place at the table. This happens all the time, this table politics. It's the reality that of the world we live in. This table is no longer a place of hospitality, but rather business and personal advancement. Several months ago, I came across this article written, posted on Facebook, and everyone was raving about it. And it was an article written by someone talking about the famous Li Ka-shing, the billionaire real estate mogul from Hong Kong, and he had some business advice for some young people. And I thought, I was reading this article and some of his advice, and some of it's really good, you know? Save your money, don't spend your money on clothes, invest in your education, and all of these other things. It's really good financial kind of life lessons. But the one thing that really stuck out to me was the advice that he gives to buy lunch for people more important than you. And I'll read his quote here. He says this, always remember to buy lunch for people who are more knowledgeable than you, richer than you, or people who have helped you in your career. Make sure you do that every month. After 1 year, your circle of friends would have generated tremendous value for you. Your reputation and influence and added value will be clearly recognized. You'll also enhance your image of being kind and generous. Now, I'm all for networking and all for the importance of seeking knowledge and wisdom from people who are more successful than you, but there's something about this quote that kind of rubs me the wrong way. Because if I'm only buying lunch for the people whom I can get something out of, whether it's social capital or whether it's a better reputation, Am I really practicing the kind of hospitality that Jesus is talking about? People shouldn't be a means to an end to when I extend hospitality to promote my own self-interest. Genuine hospitality is not a networking opportunity, but a warm and genuine welcome. You know, we live in the most beautiful part of the world. Metro Vancouver is a world-class city. It's beautiful, it's clean, it's multicultural. We've hosted the 2010 Olympics, the 2015 Women's FIFA World Cup, and in March of this year, we're going to be hosting the HSBC World Sevens Rugby Championship. I've got tickets, so I'm going to go to that and enjoy Rugby Sevens. But while the city is the most desirable city to live in, it's probably one of the most inhospitable cities and places to live. And one of the reasons why people say this is because they find it very hard to find community and find meaningful connection. In 2012, the Vancouver Foundation had done this study of life in Vancouver, and they published a survey of their findings, and they said one-third of all people across Metro Vancouver say it's difficult to make new friends here. And people who have lived in Canada or in their neighborhood fewer than 5 years find it hardest to make friends. The survey also found that there are high levels of loneliness in Metro Vancouver, with 1 in 4 people saying that they're alone more often than they would like. And young people between the ages of 24 to 34 and people living in suites like basement houses or condos report feeling alone more than others. It's a difficult city to live in if you're a newcomer. And so we find Jesus challenged as he sits at this table of hostility. And what he does is that he casts a vision of hospitality that is both humble and inclusive. First, we see that he reminds people and the people who are gathered around of the simple truth that those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. And essentially saying that there is a great reversal that is taking place. And the question is, what side of history will you be on? Will you follow the way of humble service and let that culture be the one that you create around your table? Or not? You don't have to set the finest china. You don't have to make sure that people are seated in the right place. You don't have to put out the finest cuts of meat to show off how wealthy or well off you are, but simply set the table, offer what you have, and enjoy the company of your guests. Keep it simple and keep it humble. But also keep it inclusive. And Jesus tells his hosts that when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. And it's no surprise that Jesus lists the poor, the crippled, and the lame, and the blind as honored guests among those who are invited, because this is in line with Jesus' prophetic ministry. Luke tells us in the story when Jesus enters the synagogue and reads the scroll from Isaiah, and he reads these words, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor, and he has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Jesus came for the crippled, the lame, and the blind. "Blessed are the poor in spirit, those who mourn, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness," Jesus says, "for theirs is the kingdom of God."